Welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part two of Welcome to Camp Nightmare on Dune Reads Goosebumps. First off, this weekend, or this past weekend, the first of my group of friends got married. First off, why? Because, all right, second off, god damn it, I'm getting old. I do not appreciate it. I don't like the little reminders. I'm 2 weeks shy of being 24. Which is fucking old. What am I doing with my life? Why? Goosebumps? Really? And, three, congratulations to, Caleb and Tara, you know? Caleb and Tara Paulus, because they have the same last name, because they're husband and wife. God damn, that's weird, isn't it? I just checked my mail today, and I got a replacement alumni card to Cleveland State University. This is from my realization that you don't need to go to college to be an alumni from somewhere. You can just go through the Google and search around for different alumni address things. Oh god, I'm not making this easy. Anyway, point is, I'm alumni for a few colleges, and I get alumni cards and alumni letters and stuff, and didn't go, you know? Dropped out. You can just buy the license plate frames. They don't like card you or anything. Anyway, I am drinking a rum and coke. Or not rum and coke, rum and Diet Dr. Pepper. My general drink that I prefer is the bourbon and Diet Dr. Pepper, but I bought a bunch of rum because it started to get hot, and I was like, I'm going to drink fruity drinks, some rum drinks, and it's going to be nice and relaxing, but now it's kind of cold out, and I ran out of bourbon, so, all right. Anyway, the cover of the book, I didn't say last time, is like a tent. It's green. The book, I think, is purple. Once again, I'm part colorblind. There's some eyes and a monster, like, reaching into a tent, you know? It's looking pretty spooky, you know? And the little tagline says, "It's the little camp of horrors!" Woo! All right. Chapter 9. Later that afternoon, Jay and I were writing our letters to our parents. I was feeling pretty upset about things. I kept seeing the angry expression on Larry's face as he heaved the ball at the back of Colin's head. I wrote about it in my letter. I also told my mom and dad about how there was no nurse here and about the forbidden bunk. Jay stopped writing and looked up at me from his bunk. He was really sunburned. His cheeks and forehead were bright red. He scratched his red hair. "We're dropping like flies," he said, gesturing around the nearly empty cabin. "Yeah," I agreed wistfully. "I hope Colin and Mike are okay." And then I blurted out, "Larry deliberately hit Colin." "Huh?" Jay stopped scratching his hair and lowered his hand to the bunk. "He what?" "He deliberately threw at Colin's head. I saw him," I said. My voice was shaky. I wasn't going to tell anyone, but now I was glad that I did. It made me feel a little better to get it out. But then I saw that Jay didn't believe me. "That's impossible," he said quietly. "Larry's our counselor. His hand slipped, that's all." I started to argue when the cabin door opened and Colin entered, with Larry at his side. "Colin, how are you?" I cried. Jay and I both jumped up. "Not bad," Colin replied. He forced a thin smile. I couldn't see his eyes. They were hidden once again behind his silver sunglasses. "Yeah!" "He's still a little wobbly, but he's okay," Larry said cheerfully, holding Colin's arm. "I'm sort of seeing double," Colin admitted. "I got double vision. I mean, this cabin looks really crowded to me. There are two of each of you." Jay and I uttered short, uncomfortable laughs. Larry helped Colin over to the lower bunk where Jay had been sitting. "He'll be just fine in a day or two," Larry told us. "Yeah, the headache is a little better already," Colin said, gently rubbing the back of his head, then lying down on top of the bed covers. "Did you see a doctor?" I asked. "Uh-uh, just Uncle Al," Colin replied. He looked it over and said it was fine. I cast a suspicious glance at Larry, but he turned his back on us and crouched down to search for something in the duffel bag he kept under his bed. "Where's Mike? Is he okay?" Jay asked Larry. "Uh-huh," Larry answered without turning around. "He's fine." "But where is he?" I demanded. Larry shrugged. "Still at the lodge, I guess. I don't really know." "But he is coming back," I insisted. Larry shoved the bag under his bed and stood up. "Have you guys finished your letters?" he asked. "Hurry and get changed for dinner. You can mail your letters at the lodge." He started to the door. "Hey, don't forget tonight is tent night, so let's pitch 'em, boys. You guys are sleeping in a tent tonight." We all groaned. But Larry, it's too cold now, Jay protested. Larry ignored him and turned away. Hey, Larry, do you have anything I can put on this sunburn? Jay called after him. No, Larry replied and disappeared out the door. Jay and I helped Colin up to the lodge. He was still seeing double and his headache was pretty bad. The three of us sat at the end of the long table nearest the window. A strong breeze blew cold air over the table, which felt good on our sunburned skin. We had some kind of meat with potatoes and gravy for dinner. It wasn't great, but I was so hungry it didn't matter. Colin didn't have much of an appetite. He picked at the edges of his gray meat. The mess hall was as noisy as ever. Kids were laughing and shouting to each other. The mess hall was as noisy as ever. Kids were laughing and shouting to friends across the long tables. At one table, the guys were throwing breadsticks back and forth like javelins. As usual, the counselors, dressed in their green and white, ate together at a table in the far corner and ignored us campers completely. The rumor spread that we were going to learn all of the camp songs after dinner. Guys were groaning and complaining about that. About halfway through dinner, Jay and the boy across the table, a kid named Roger, what's up with that, started horsing around, trying to wrestle a breadstick from each other. Jay pulled hard and won the breadstick, and spilled his entire cup of grape juice on my tan shorts. Hey! I jumped up angrily, staring down as the purple stain spread across the front of my shorts, making it look like a maxi pad commercial. Billy had an accident, Roger cried out. Everyone laughed. Yeah, he purpled his pants, Jay added. Everyone thought that was hilarious. It was. Someone threw a breadstick at me. It bounced off my chest and landed on my dinner plate. More laughter. The food fight lasted only a few minutes. Then two of the counselors broke it up. I decided I'd better run back to the bunk and change my shorts. As I hurried out, I could hear Jay and Roger calling out jokes about me. I ran full speed down the hill toward the bunks. I wanted to get back up to the mess hall in time for dessert. Pushing open the bunk door with my shoulder, I darted across the small room to the dresser and pulled open my drawer. Huh? To my surprise, I stared into an empty drawer. It had been completely cleaned out. What's going on here? I asked out loud. Where's my stuff? Confused, I took a step back and realized I had opened the wrong drawer. This wasn't my drawer. It was Mike's. I stared for a long while into the empty drawer. Mike's clothes had all been removed. I turned and looked for his trunk, which had been stacked on its side behind the bunk. Mike's trunk was gone, too. Mike wasn't coming back. I was so upset I ran back to the mess hall without changing my poopy shorts. Panting loud, I made my way to the counselor's table and came up behind Larry. He was talking to the counselor next to him, a fat guy with long, scraggly blonde hair. Larry, Mike's gone, I cried breathlessly. Larry didn't turn around. He kept talking to the other counselor as if I weren't there. I grabbed Larry's shoulder. Larry, listen, I cried. Mike, he's gone. Larry turned around slowly, his expression annoyed. Go back to your table, Billy, he snapped. This table is for counselors only. But what about Mike? I insisted shrilly. His stuff is gone. What happened to him? Is he okay? How should I know? Larry replied impatiently. Did they send him home? I asked, refusing to go back away until I had some kind of answer. Yeah, maybe, Larry shrugged and lowered his gaze. You spilled something on your shorts. My heart was pounding so hard, I could feel the blood pulsing at my temples. You really don't know what happened to Mike? I asked, feeling defeated. Larry shook his head. I'm sure he's fine, he replied, turning back to his pals. He probably went up for a swim, the scraggly-haired guy next to him snickered. Larry and some of the other counselors laughed, too. I didn't think it was funny. I felt pretty sick and a little frightened. Don't the counselors at this camp care what happens to us? I asked myself glumly. I made my way back to the table. They were passing out chocolate pudding for dessert, but I wasn't hungry. I told Colin and Jay and Roger about Mike's dresser drawer being cleaned out and about how Larry pretended he didn't know anything about it. They didn't get as upset as I was. Uncle Al probably had to send Mike home because of his hand, Colin said quietly, spooning up his pudding. It was pretty swollen. But why wouldn't Larry tell me the truth? I asked, my stomach still feeling as if I had eaten a giant rock for dinner. People can't eat rocks, Billy. Crazy. Why did he say he didn't know what happened to Mike? Counselors don't like to talk about bad stuff, Jay said, slapping the top of his pudding with his spoon. It might give us poor little kids nightmares. He filled his spoon with pudding, tilted it back, and flung a dark glob of pudding onto Roger's forehead. Jay, you're dead meat now, Roger cried, plunging his spoon into the chocolate goo. He shot a gob of it onto the front of Jay's sleeveless t-shirt. That started a pudding war that spread down the long table. There was no more talk about Mike. After dinner, Uncle Al talked about tent night and what a great time we were going to have sleeping in tents tonight.
Just be very quiet so the bears can't find you, he joked. Some joke.
Then he and the counselors taught us the camp songs. Uncle Al made us sing them over and over until we learned them. I didn't feel much like singing, but Jay and Roger began making up really gross words to all the songs. And pretty soon a whole bunch of us joined in, singing our own versions of the song as loudly as we could. Later, we were all making our way down the hill toward our tents. It was a cool, clear night. A wash of pale stars covered the purple-black sky. I helped Colin down the hill. He was still seeing double and feeling a little weak. Jay and Roger walked a few steps ahead of us, shoving each other with their shoulders. First to the left, then to the right, then to the left, then to the right, everybody put your hands in the air and wave them like you just don't care. And if you're doing some stuff and you like stupid songs, then someone say, hell yeah.
Franklin is when you say hello. Yeah. Franklin. Franklin, say hell yeah.
Dogs don't say hell yeah, even when they're partying. Suddenly, Jay turned back to Colin and me. Tonight's the night. Tonight is the night, he whispered. A devilish grin spread across his face. Huh? Tonight's what night? I demanded. Shh. He raised a finger to his lips. When everyone's asleep, Roger and I are going to check out the forbidden bong. He turned to Colin. You with us? Colin shook his head sadly. I don't think I can, Jay. Walking backwards in front of us, Jay locked his eyes on mine. How about you, Billy? You coming? Or are you chicken? Chapter 10! Yap that fool! Chapter 10! Kidnap that fool! I think I'll stay with Colin, I told him. I heard Roger mutter something about being a chicken. Jay looked disappointed. You're gonna miss out, he said. That's okay, I'm kinda tired, I said. It was true, I felt so weary after this long day. Every muscle ached, even my hair hurt. Jay and Roger made whispered plans all the way back to the tent. At the bottom of the hill, I stopped and gazed up at the forbidden bunk. It appeared to lean toward me in the pale starlight. I listened for the familiar howls that seemed to come from inside it, but tonight there was only a heavy silence. The large plastic tents were lined up in the bunk area. I crawled into ours and lay down on top of my sleeping bag. The ground was really hard. I could see this was going to be a long night. Jay and Colin were messing around with their sleeping bags at the back of the tent. Wow, I'm really glad I didn't misread it as they were messing around in their sleeping bags, because they... It seemed weird without Mike here, I said, feeling a sudden chill. Now you'll have more room to put your stuff, Jay replied casually. He sat hunched against the tent wall, his expression tense, his eyes on the darkness outside the tent door, which was left open a few inches. Larry was nowhere in sight. Colin sat quietly. He still wasn't feeling right. I shifted my weight and stretched out, trying to find a comfortable position. I really wanted to go to sleep, but I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep until after Jay and Roger returned from their adventure. Time moved slowly. It was cold outside. The air was heavy and wet inside the tent. I stared up at the tent, the dark plastic tent. I stared up at the dark plastic tent walls. A bug crawled across my forehead. I squashed it with my hand. I could hear Jay and Colin whispering behind me, but I couldn't make out their words. Jay snickered nervously. I must have dozed off. An insistent whispering sound woke me up. It took me a while to realize it was someone whispering outside the tent. I lifted my head and saw Roger's face peering in. I sat up, alert. Wish us luck, Jay whispered. Good luck, I whispered back, my voice clogged from sleep. Jay walked out. He was angry. He tried to slam the flap. Zip, zip. Fuck you.
Get it? Because it was a Mitch Hedberg joke? That wasn't in the book. It was just I was doing the Mitch Hedberg thing because like, that's what he did. I saw him live when he was alive, obviously. So that's like total hipster cred.
Anyway, In the darkness, I saw Jay's large, shadowy form crawl quickly to the tent door. He pushed it open, revealing a square of purple sky, then vanished into the darkness. I shivered. "Let's sneak back to the bunk," I whispered to Colin. "It's too cold out here, and the ground feels like solid rock." Colin agreed. We both scrambled out of the tent and made our way silently to our nice, warm bunk. Inside, we headed to the window to try to see Jay and Roger. "They're going to get caught," I whispered. "I just know it." "They won't get caught," Colin disagreed. "But they won't see anything, either. There's nothing to see up there. It's just a stupid cabin." Poking my head out the window, I could hear Jay and Roger giggling quietly out somewhere in the dark. The camp was so silent, so eerily silent, I could hear their whispers, their legs brushing through the tall grass. "They'd better be quiet," Colin muttered, leaning against the window frame. "They're making too much noise." "They must be up to the hill by now," I whispered. I stuck my head out as far as I could see, but I couldn't see them. Colin started to reply, but the first scream made him stop. It was a scream of horror that cut through the silent air. "Oh!" I cried out and pulled my head in. "Was that Jay or Roger?" Colin asked, his voice trembling. The second scream was more terrifying than first. Before it died down, I heard animal snarls, loud and angry, like an eruption of thunder. Then I heard Jay's desperate plea, "Help us, please! Somebody help us!" My heart thudding in my chest, I lurched to the cabin door and pulled it open. The hideous scream still ringing in my ears, I plunged out into the darkness, the dew-covered ground soaking my bare feet. "Jay, where are you?" I heard myself calling, but I didn't recognize my shrill, frightened voice. And then I saw a dark form running toward me, running bent over, arms outstretched. "Jay!" I cried. "What is it? What happened?" He ran up to me, still bent forward, his face twisted with horror, his eyes wide and unblinking. His bushy hair appeared to stand straight up. It got Roger!" he moaned, his chest heaving as he struggled to straighten up. "What did?" I demanded. "What was it?" Colin asked right behind me. "I don't know," Jay stammered, shutting his eyes tight. It tore Roger to pieces!" Jay uttered a loud sob. Then he opened his eyes and spun around in terror. "Here it comes!" he shrieked. "It's coming after us!" Chapter 11. In the pale starlight, I saw Jay's eyes roll up in his head. His knees collapsed, and he began to slump to the ground. I grabbed him before he fell and dragged him into the cabin. Colin slammed the door behind us. Once inside, Jay recovered slowly. The three of us froze in place and listened hard. I was still holding onto Jay's heaving shoulders. He was as pale as a bedsheet, and his breath came out in short, frightened moans. We listened. Silence. The air hung hot and still. Nothing moved. No footsteps. No animals approaching. Just Jay's frightened moans and the pounding of my heart. And then, somewhere far in the distance, I heard the howl. Soft and low at first, then rising in the wind. A howl that chilled my blood and made me cry out, "It's Saber! Don't let it get me," Jay shrieked. Covering his face with his hands, he dropped to his knees on the cabin floor. "Don't let it get me!" I raised my eyes to Colin, who was huddled against the wall. Away from the window. "We have to get Larry," I managed to choke out. "We have to get help." "But how?" Colin demanded in a trembling voice. "Don't let it get me," Jay repeated, crumpled on the floor. "It isn't coming here," I told him, trying to sound certain, trying to sound soothing. "We're okay inside the bunk, Jay. It isn't coming here." "But it got Roger and..." Jay started, his entire body convulsed in a shudder of terror. Thinking about Roger, I felt a stab of fear inside my chest. Was it really true? Was it true that Roger had been attacked by some kind of creature? That he'd been slashed into pieces? I heard the screams from the hillside, the two blood-curdling screams. They'd been so loud, so horrifying. Hadn't someone else in the camp heard them too? Hadn't any other kids heard Roger's cries? Hadn't any counselors heard? I froze in place and listened. Silence. The whisper of the breeze rustling the tree leaves. No voices, no cries of alarm, no hurried footsteps. I turned back toward the others. Colin had helped Jay to his bunk. "Where can Larry be?" Colin asked. His eyes, for once not hidden behind the silver sunglasses, showed real fear. "Where can everyone be?" I asked, crossing my arms over my chest and starting to pace back and forth in the small space between the bunks. There isn't a sound out there. I saw Jay's eyes go wide with horror. He was staring at the open window. The creature, he cried. Here it comes. It's coming through the window. All right, I've switched to Steel Reserve, and this is Chapter 12! All three of us gaped in horror at the open window, but no creature jumped in. As I stared, frozen in the center of the cabin, I could see only darkness and a fringe of pale stars. Outside in the trees, crickets started up a shrill clatter. There was no other sound. Poor Jay was so frightened and upset, he was seeing things. Somehow, Colin and I got him a little calmed down. We made him take off his sneakers and lie down on the lower bed, and we covered him up with three blankets to help him stop trembling. Really, that was the twist, though, R.L. Stine, this someone seeing things? Colin and I wanted to run for help, but we were too frightened to go outside. The three of us were up all night. Larry never showed up. Except for the crickets and the brush of the wind through the trees, the camp was silent. I think I must have finally dozed off before dawn. I had a strange nightmare about fires and people trying to run away. I was awakened by Colin shaking me hard. Breakfast, he said hoarsely. Hurry, we're late. I sat up groggily. Where's Larry? He never showed, Colin replied, motioning to Larry's unused bunk. We've got to find him. We've got to tell him what happened, Jay cried, hurrying to the cabin door with his sneakers untied. Colin and I stumbled after him, both of us only half awake. It was a cool gray morning. The sun was trying hard to poke through the high white clouds. The three of us stopped halfway up the hill to the mess hall. Reluctantly, our eyes searched the ground around the forbidden bunk. I don't know what I was expecting to see, but there was no sign of Roger, no sign of any struggle, no dried blood on the ground. The tall grass wasn't bent or matted down. Weird, I heard Jay muttered, shaking his head. That's weird. I tugged his arm to get him moving, and we hurried the rest of the way up to the lodge. The mess hall was as noisy as ever. Kids were laughing and shouting to each other. It all seemed perfectly normal. I guessed that no one had made an announcement about Roger yet. Some kids called to Colin and me, but we ignored them and searched for Roger, moving quickly through the aisles between the tables. No sign of him. I had a heavy, queasy feeling in my stomach as we hurried to the counselor's table in the corner. Larry glanced up from a big plate of scrambled eggs and bacon as the three of us advanced on him. What happened to Roger? Is he okay? Where were you last night? Roger and I were attacked. We were afraid to go find you. Fucking talking. All three of us bombarded Larry at once. His face was filled with confusion, and he raised both hands in silence. Whoa, he said. Take a breath, guys. What are you talking about? About Roger, Jay screamed, his face turning bright red. The creature had jumped on him, and... Larry glanced at the other counselors at the table, who looked as confused as he did. Creature? What creature? Larry demanded. It attacked Roger, Jay screamed. It was coming after me, and... Larry stared up at Jay. Someone was attacked? I don't think so, Jay. He turned to the counselor next to him, a pudgy boy named Derek. Did you hear anything in your area? Derek shook his head. Isn't Roger in your group? Larry asked Derek. Derek shook his head. Not in my group. But Roger, Jay insisted. We didn't get any report about any attack, Larry said, interrupting. If a camper was attacked by a bear or something, we'd hear about it. And we hear the noise, Derek offered, you know, screams or something. I heard screams, I told them. We both heard screams, Colin added quickly, and Jay came running back crying for help. Well, why didn't anyone else hear it? Larry demanded, turning his gaze on Jay. His expression changed. Where did this happen? When? He asked suspiciously. Jay's face darkened to a deeper red. After lights out, he admitted. Roger and I went up to the forbidden bunk and... Are you sure it wasn't a bear? Derek interrupted. Some bears were spotted downriver yesterday afternoon. It was a creature! Jay screamed angrily. He shouldn't have been out, Larry said, shaking his head. Why won't you just listen to me? Jay screamed. Roger was attacked. This big thing jumped on him and... We would have heard something, Derek said calmly, glancing at Larry. Yeah, Larry agreed. The counselors were up here at the lodge. We would have heard any screams. But... Larry, you've got to check it out, I cried. Jay isn't making it up. It really happened. Okay, okay, Larry replied, raising its hands as if surrendering. I'll go ask Uncle Al about it, okay? Hurry, Jay insisted, please! I'll ask Uncle Al after breakfast, Larry said, turning back to his eggs and bacon. I'll see you guys at the morning swim later. I'll report when Uncle Al says. But Larry, Jay pleaded, I'll ask Uncle Al, Larry said firmly. If anything happened last night, he'll know about it. He raised a strip of bacon to his mouth and chewed on it. I think she just had a bad nightmare or something, he continued, eyeing Jay suspiciously. But I'll let you know what Uncle Al says. It wasn't a nightmare, Jay cried shrilly. Larry turned his back on us and continued eating his breakfast. Don't you care? Jay screamed. Don't you care what happens to us? I saw that a lot of kids had stopped eating their breakfast to gawk at us. I pulled Jay away and tried to get him to our table, but he insisted on searching the entire mess hall again. I know Roger isn't here, he insisted. He can't be! For the second time, the three of us made our way up and down the aisles between the tables, studying every face. One thing was for sure, Roger was nowhere to be seen. The sun burned through the high clouds just as we reached the waterfront for morning swim. The air was still cool. The thick, leafy shrubs along the riverbank glistened wetly in the white glare of sunlight. I dropped my towel under a bush and turned to the gently flowing green water. I'll bet it's cold this morning, I said to Colin, who was retying the string on his swim trunks. I just want to go back to the bunk and go to sleep, Colin said, plucking at a knot. He wasn't seeing double any longer, but he was tired from being up all night. Several guys were already wading into the river. They were complaining about the cold water, splashing each other, shoving each other forward. "Where's Larry?" Jay demanded breathlessly, pushing his way through the clump of shrubs to get us. His auburn hair was a mess, half of it standing straight up on the side of his head. His eyes were red-rimmed and bloodshot. "Where's Larry?" he promised. "He'd be here," Jay said, frantically searching the waterfront. "Here I am!" The three of us spun around as Larry appeared from the bushes behind us. He was wearing baggy green Camp Night Moon swim trunks. "Well?" Jay demanded. "What did Uncle Al say? What about Roger?" Larry's expression was serious. His eyes locked on Jay's. Uncle Al and I went all around the forbidden bunk, he told Jay. There wasn't any attack there. There couldn't have been. But it caught Roger, Jay cried shrilly. It slashed him. I saw it. Larry shook his head, his eyes still burning into Jay's. That's the other thing, he said softly. Uncle Al and I went up to the office and checked the records, Jay. And there's no camper here this year named Roger. Not a first name or a middle name. No Roger. No Roger at all. Heyo, it is now July 6th. God damn, I suck at getting these out quick now. I need to record this so Nick gets off my back. And, yeah, sorry about the quality on this one. I didn't realize I was saving it the wrong format, and I saved a shit ton of other work in shitty formats too, so, fuck. Oh well. Chapter 13. Jay's mouth dropped open and he uttered a low gasp. All three of us stared in disbelief at Larry, letting this startling news sink in. Someone's made a mistake, Jay said finally, his voice trembling with emotion. We searched the mess hall for him, Larry, and he's gone. Roger isn't here. He was never here, Larry said without any emotion at all. I just don't believe this, Jay cried. How about a swim, guys? Larry said, motioning to the water. Well, what do you think? I demanded of Larry. I couldn't believe he was being so calm about this. What do you think happened last night? Larry shrugged. I don't know what to think, he replied, his eyes on the cluster of swimmers farthest from the shore. Maybe you guys are trying to pull a weird joke on me. Huh? Is that what you think? Jay cried. That isn't a joke! Larry shuddered again. Swim time, guys! Get some exercise, okay? Jay started to say more, but Larry quickly turned and went running into the green water. He took 4 or 5 running steps off the shore, then dove, pulling himself quickly through the water, taking long, steady strokes. I'm not going in, Jay insisted angrily. I'm going back to the bunk. His face was bright red, his chin was trembling. I could see that he was about to cry. He turned and began running through the bushes, dragging his towel along the ground. Hey, wait up! Colin went running after him. I stood there trying to decide what to do. I didn't want to follow Jay to the bunk. There wasn't anything I could do to help him. Maybe a cold swim will make me feel better, I thought. Maybe nothing will make me feel better, I told myself glumly. I stared out at the other guys in the water. Larry and another counselor were setting up a race. I could hear them discussing what kind of stroke should be used. They all seemed to be having a great time, I thought, watching them line up. So why aren't I? Why have I been so frightened and unhappy since I arrived here? Why don't other campers see how weird and frightening this place is? I shook my head, unable to answer my questions. I need to swim. I took a step toward the water, but someone reached out from the bushes and grabbed me roughly from behind. I started to scream out in protest, but my attacker quickly clamped a hand over my mouth to silence me. Oh my. Woo! Hey! Chapter 14. I tried to pull away, but I had been caught off guard. As the hands tugged me, I lost my balance and I was pulled back into the bushes. Is this a joke? What's going on? I wondered. Suddenly, as I tried to tug myself free, the hands let go. I went sailing headfirst into a clump of fat green leaves. 420. It took me a long moment to pull myself up. Then I spun around to see the face of my attacker. Dawn! I cried. Shh! She leapt forward and clamped a hand over my mouth again. Duck down, she whispered urgently. They'll see you. I obediently ducked behind a low bush. She let go of me and moved back. She was wearing a blue one-piece bathing suit. It was wet. Her blonde hair was also wet, dripping down to her bare shoulders. Dawn, what are you doing here? I whispered, settling onto my knees before Dawn could reply. Another figure in a bathing suit moved quickly from the bushes, crouching low. It was Dawn's friend, Dory. We swam over early this morning, Dory whispered, nervously pushing her curly red hair. We waited here in the bushes. But it's not allowed, I said, unable to hide my confusion. If you're caught, we want to talk to you, Dawn interrupted. We had to, raising her head to peek over the top of the bushes, then quickly ducking back down. We decided to risk it, Dory added. What's wrong? I stammered. A red and black bug crawled up my shoulder. I brushed it away. It's probably a ladybug, dude. Yeah, now who knows about bugs? Dune. The girls' camp! It's a nightmare! Dory whispered. The girls' camp, it's a nightmare! Everybody calls it Camp Nightmare instead of Camp Nightmoon, Dawn added. Strange things have been happening. Huh? I gaped at her. Not far from us in the water, I could hear the shouts and splashes of the swim race beginning. What kind of strange things? Scary things, Dory replied, her expression solemn. Girls have disappeared, Dawn told me, just vanished from sight. And no one seems to care, Dory added in a trembling whisper. I don't believe it, I uttered. The same thing has happened here, at the boys' camp, I swallowed hard. Remember Mike? Both girls nodded. Mike disappeared, I told them. They removed his stuff and he just disappeared. It's unbelievable, Dory said. Three girls are gone from our camp. They announced that one was attacked by a bear, Dawn whispered. What about the other two, I asked. Just gone, Dawn replied, the words catching in her throat. I could hear whistles blowing in the water. The race had ended. Another one was being organized. The sun disappeared once again behind the high white clouds. Shadows lengthened and grew darker. I told them quickly about Roger and Jay and the attack at the forbidden bunk. They listened in open-mouthed silence. Just like at our camp, Dawn said. We have to do something, Dory said heatedly. We have to get together, the boys and the girls, Dawn whispered, peering once again over the tops of the leaves. We have to make a plan. You mean to escape? I asked, not really understanding. The two girls nodded. We can't stay here, Dawn said grimly. Every day another girl disappears, and the counselors act as if nothing happened. I think they want us to get killed or something, Dory added with emotion. Have you written to your parents? I asked. We write every day, Dory replied. But we haven't heard from them. I suddenly realized that I hadn't received any mail from my parents either. They had both promised to write every day, but I had been at camp for nearly a week and hadn't received a single piece of mail. Visitor's Day is next week, I said. Our parents will be here. We can tell them everything. It may be too late, Dawn said grimly. Everyone is so scared, Dora declared. I haven't slept in 2 nights. I hear these horrible screams outside every night. Another whistle blew, closer to shore. I could hear the swimmers returning. Morning swim was ending. I don't know what to say, I told them. You've got to be careful. Don't get caught. We'll swim back to the girls' camp when everyone has left, Dawn said. But we have to meet again, Billy. We have to get more guys together. You know, maybe we all get organized. Her voice trailed off. There's something bad going on at this camp, Dory said with a shiver, narrowing her eyes. Something evil. I know, I agreed. I can hear boys' voices now, close by, just on the other side of the leafy bushes. I've got to go. We'll try to meet here again the day after tomorrow, Dawn whispered. Be careful, Billy. You be careful, I whispered. Don't get caught. They slipped back, deeper into the bushes. All I wanted was to slip back deeper in their bushes. Crouching low, I made my way from the shore. When I was past the clump of bushes, I stood up and began to run. I couldn't wait to tell Colin and Jay about what the girls had said. I felt frightened and excited at the same time. I thought maybe it would make Jay feel a little better to know that the same kinds of horrible things were happening across the river at the girls' camp.
Yeah, that seems to not make things better at all.
Halfway to the bunks, I had an idea. I stopped and turned toward the lodge. I suddenly remembered seeing a payphone on the wall on the side of the building. Someone had told me the phone was the only one campers were allowed to use. I'll call Mom and Dad, I decided. Why hadn't I thought of it before? I'm so stupid. I can call my parents, I realize, and tell them everything. I could ask them to come and get me, and they could get Jay and Colin and Dawn and Dory and Dune and Nick and Sam Skills and Kelly and Franklin and Dr. Sleepless and the bottle of night train I'm drinking, too. Behind me, I saw my group heading toward the scratch ball field, their swimming towels slung over their shoulders. I wonder if anyone had noticed that I was missing. Jay and Colin were missing, too, I told myself. Larry and the others probably think I'm with them. I watched them trooping across the tall grass in twos and threes. Then I turned and started jogging up the hill toward the lodge. The idea of calling home had cheered me up already. I was so eager to hear my parents' voices, so eager to tell them the strange things that were happening here. Would they believe me? Of course they would. My parents always believed me, because they trusted me. As I ran up the hill, the dark payphone came into view on the white lodge wall. I started to run at full speed. I wanted to fly to the phone. I hope Mom and Dad are home, I thought. They've got to be home. They don't do anything with their lives. Oh, God, I hate my parents. I was panting loudly as I reached the wall. I lowered my hands to my knees and crouched there for a moment, waiting to catch my breath. Then I reached up to take the receiver down and gasped. The payphone was plastic, just a stage prop. A phony!
good one, R.L. Stein, because, like, phony means fake, but it's also referring to a phone that's not really a phone. It's plastic.
In fact, it was a thin sheet of molded plastic held to the wall by a nail, made to look just like a telephone. It wasn't real, it was fake.
Wouldn't it be a lot less effort to just get a broken payphone and leave it there as opposed to get a plastic molded one?
They don't want us to call out, I thought with a sudden chill, my heart thudding, my head spinning in bitter disappointment. I turned away from the wall and bumped right into Uncle Al. You've got to know when to chapter, know when to 15. Billy, what are you doing up here? Uncle Al asked. He was wearing baggy green camp shorts and a sleeveless white t-shirt that revealed his meaty pink arms.
I gotta stop singing.
He carried a brown clipboard filled with papers. Where are you supposed to be?
I wanted to make a phone call, I stammered, taking a step back. I wanted to call my parents.
He eyed me suspiciously and fingered his yellow mustache. Really?
Yeah, just wanted to say hi, I told him.
But the phone, Uncle Al followed my gaze to the plastic phone. He chuckled.
Someone put that up as a joke, he said, grinning to me.
Did it fool you?
Yeah, I admitted, feeling my face grow hot. I raised my eyes to his. Where's the real phone?
His grin faded. His expression turned serious.
No phone, he replied sharply. Campers aren't allowed to call out. It's a rule, Billy.
Oh, I didn't know what to say.
Are you really homesick? Uncle Al asked softly.
I nodded.
Well, go write your mom and dad a long letter, he said. It'll make you feel a lot better.
Okay, I said. I didn't think it would make me feel better, but I wanted to get away from Uncle Al. He raised his clipboard and gazed at it.
Where are you supposed to be now?
He asked. Scratch ball, I think, I replied. I didn't feel too well, see, I...
And when is your canoe trip? He asked, not listening to me.
He flipped through the sheets of paper on the clipboard, glancing over them quickly.
Canoe trip? I hadn't heard about any canoe trip. Tomorrow, he said, answering his own question. Your group goes tomorrow. Are you excited? He lowered his eyes to mine. I didn't really know about it, I confessed. Lots of fun, he exclaimed enthusiastically. The river doesn't look like much from up here, but it gets pretty exciting a few miles down. You'll find yourself in some good rapids. He squeezed my shoulder briefly. You'll enjoy it, he said, grinning. Everyone always enjoys the canoe ride. Great, I said, trying to sound a little excited, but my voice came out flat and uncertain. Uncle Al gave me a wave with his clipboard and headed around toward the front of the lodge, taking long strides. I stood watching him till he disappeared around the corner of the building. Then I made my way down the hill to the bunk. I found Colin and Jay on the grass at the side of the cabin. Colin had his shirt off and was sprawled on his back, his hands behind his head. Jay sat cross-legged beside him, nervously pulling up long, slender strands of... Come on, dude. Nervously pulling up long, slender strands of grass, then tossing them down. Come inside, I told them, glancing around to make sure no one else could hear. They followed me into the cabin. I closed the door. What's up? Colin asked, dropping onto a lower bunk. He picked up his red bandana and twisted it in his hands. I told them about Dawn and Dory and what they had reported about the girls' camp. Colin and Jay both reacted with shock. They really swam over here and waited for you? Jay asked. I nodded. They think we have to get organized or escape or something, I said. They could get in big trouble if they got caught, Jay said thoughtfully. We're all in big trouble, I told him. We have to get out. Visitor's Day is next week, Colin muttered. I'm going to write to my parents right now, I said, pulling out the case from under my bunk where I kept my paper and pens. I'm going to tell them that I have to come home on Visitor's Day. I guess I will too, Jay said, tapping his fingers nervously against the bunk frame. Me too, Colin agreed. It's just too weird here. I pulled out a couple of sheets of paper and sat down on the bed to write. Dawn and Dory were really scared, I told them. So am I, Jay admitted. I started to write my letter. I wrote, Dear Mom and Dad, help! Then stopped. I raised my eyes across the cabin at Jay and Colin. Do you guys know about the canoe trip tomorrow, I asked. They stared back at me, their expressions surprised. Whoa, Colin declared. A 3-mile hike this afternoon and a canoe trip tomorrow? It was my turn to be surprised. Hike? What hike? Aren't you coming on it? Jay asked. You know that really tall counselor, Frank, the one who wears the yellow cap? Colin asked. He told Jay and me we're going on this 3-mile hike after lunch. No one told me, I replied, chewing on the end of my pen. Maybe you're not in the hike group, Jay said. You better ask Frank at lunch, Colin suggested. Maybe he couldn't find you. Maybe you're supposed to come, too. I groaned. Who wants to go on a 3-mile hike in this heat? Colin and Jay shrugged. Frank said we'd really like it, Colin told me, nodding and unnodding the red bandana. I just want to get out of here, I said, returning to my letter. I wrote quickly, intensely. I wanted to tell my parents all the frightening, strange things that had happened. I wanted to make them see why I couldn't stay at Camp Nightmoon. I had written nearly a page and a half, and I was up to the part where Jay and Roger went out to explore the forbidden bunk when Jay burst in. Also, when Larry burst in and Jay was already there. You guys taking a day off? He asked, his eyes going from one of us to the other. You on vacation or something? Just hanging out, Jay replied. I folded up my letter and started to tuck it in my pillow. I didn't want Larry to see it. I realized I didn't trust Larry at all. I had no reason to. What are you doing, Billy? He asked suspiciously, his eyes stopping on the letter I was shoving under the pillow. Just riding home, I replied softly. You homesick or something? He asked. A grin spread across his face. Maybe, I muttered. Well, it's lunchtime, guys, he announced. Let's hustle, okay? We all climbed out of our bunks. Jay and Colin are going on a hike with Frank this afternoon, I heard, Larry said. Lucky guys. He turned and started at the door. Larry, I called to him. Hey, Larry, what about me? Am I supposed to go on the hike too? Not today, he called back. But why not? But Larry disappeared out the door. I turned back to my two bunkmates. Lucky guys, I teased them. They both growled back at me in reply. Then we headed up the hill to lunch. They served pizza for lunch, which is usually my favorite. But today, the pizza was cold and tasted like cardboard, and the cheese stuck to the roof of my mouth. Why did you guys use so much cardboard? I wasn't really hungry. I kept thinking about Dawn and Dory, how frightened they were, how desperate. I wondered when I'd see them again. I wondered if they would swim over and hide at the boys' camp again for Visitor's Day. After lunch, Frank came by our table to pick up Jay and Colin. I asked him if I was supposed to come too. "You weren't on the list, Billy," he said, scratching at a mosquito bite on his neck. "I can only take two at a time, you know? The trail gets a little dangerous." "Dangerous?" Jay asked, climbing up from the table. Frank grinned at them. "You're a big, strong guy," he told Jay. "You'll do okay." I watched Frank lead Colin and Jay out of the mess hall. Our table was empty now, except for a couple of blonde-haired guys I didn't know who were arm-wrestling down at the end near the wall. I pushed my tray away and stood up. I wanted to go back to the bunk and finish the letter to my parents, but as I took a few steps towards the door, I felt a hand on my shoulder. I turned to see Larry grinning down at me. "Tennis tournament," he said. "Huh?" I reacted with surprise. "Billy, you're representing Bunk 4 in the tennis tournament," Larry said. "Didn't you see the lineup? It was posted on the announcements board." "But I'm terrible at tennis," I protested. "We're counting on you," Larry replied. "Get a racket and get your bod to the courts." I spent the afternoon playing tennis. Hey guys, this is Dune. This is a side note. I don't want to brag, but I was 4-year varsity tennis in high school. So if you guys need tips on tennis, you know, if you need like a spotter or a coach or something, we can work on your backhand or something. Just hit me up at DuneReadsGoosebumps@gmail.com. I beat a little kid in straight sets. I had the feeling that he had never held a tennis racket before. Then I lost a long, hard-fought match to one of the blonde-haired boys who had been arm wrestling at lunch. I was drowning in sweat, and every muscle in my body ached when the match was over. I headed to the waterfront for a refreshing swim. Then I returned to the bunk, changed into jeans and a green and white Camp Night Moon t-shirt, and finished my letter to my parents. It was nearly dinner time. Jay and Colin weren't back from their hike yet. I decided to go up to the lodge and mail my letter. As I headed up the hill, I saw clusters of kids hurrying to their bunks to change for dinner. But no sign of my two bunkmates. Holding the letter tightly, I headed around to the back of the lodge building where the camp office was located. The door was wide open, so I walked in. A young woman was usually behind the counter to answer questions and take the letters to be mailed. "Anyone here?" I called, leaning over the counter and peering into the tiny back room, which was dark. No reply. "Hi, anyone here?" I repeated, clutching the envelope. No, the office was empty. Disappointed, I started to leave. Then I glimpsed the large burlap bag on the floor just inside the tiny back room. The mail bag! I decided to put my letter in the bag with the others to be mailed. I slipped around the corner and into the back room and crouched down to put my envelope in the bag. To my surprise, the mail bag was stuffed full of letters. As I pulled the bag open and started to shove my letter inside, a bunch of letters fell out on the floor. I started to scoop them up when a letter caught my eye. It was one of mine, addressed to my parents. One I'd written yesterday. "Weird," I muttered aloud. Bending over the bag, I reached in and pulled out a big handful of letters. Sifting through them quickly, I found a letter Colin had written. I pulled out another pile, and my eyes fell upon two other letters I had written nearly a week ago when I first arrived at camp. I stared at them, feeling a cold chill run down my back. All of our letters, all of the letters we had written since the first day at camp were here, in this mailbag. None of them had been mailed. We couldn't call home. We couldn't write. Frantically, my hands trembling, I began shoving the envelopes back in the mailbag. What was going on here, I wondered. What is going on?
Chapter 16.
By the time I got into the mess hall, Uncle Al was finishing the evening announcements. I slid into my seat, hoping I hadn't missed anything important. I expected to see Jay and Colin across the table from me, but their places on the bench were empty. That's strange, I thought, still shaken from my discovery about the mailbag. They should be back by now. I wanted to tell them about the mail. I wanted to share the news that our parents weren't getting any of the letters we wrote, and we weren't getting any of theirs. The camp had to be keeping mail from us, I suddenly realized. Colin and Jay, where are you? The fried chicken was greasy and the potatoes were lumpy and tasted like paste. As I forced the food down, I kept turning to glance at the mess hall door, expecting to see my two bunkmates. But they didn't show up. A heavy feeling of dread formed in my stomach. Through the mess hall window, I could see that it was already dark outside. Where could they be? A 3-mile hike and back shouldn't take this many hours. I pulled myself up and made my way to the counselor's table in the corner. Larry was having a loud argument about sports with two of the other counselors. They were shouting and gesturing with their hands. Frank's chair was empty. Larry, did Frank get back? I interrupted their discussion. Larry turned, a startled expression on his face. Frank? He motioned to the empty chair at his table. Guess not. He took Jay and Colin on a hike, I said. Shouldn't they be back by now? Larry shrugged. Beats me. He returned to his argument, leaving me standing there staring at Frank's empty chair. After the trays had been cleared, we pushed the tables and benches against the wall and had indoor relay races. Everyone seemed to be having a great time. The shouts and cheers echoed off the high raftered ceiling. I was too worried about Jay and Colin to enjoy the games. Maybe they decided to camp out overnight, I told myself. But I had seen them leave and knew they hadn't taken any tents or sleeping bags or any other overnight supplies. So where the fuck were they? The games ended a little before lights out. As I followed the crowd to the door, Larry appeared beside me. We're leaving early tomorrow, he said. First thing. Huh? I didn't understand what he meant. The canoe trip. I'm the canoe counselor. I'll be taking you guys, he explained, seeing my confusion. Oh. Okay, I replied without enthusiasm. I was so worried about Jay and Colin, I'd nearly forgotten about the canoe trip. Right after breakfast, Larry said, wear a bathing suit, bring a change of clothes, meet me at the waterfront. He hurried back to help the other counselors pull the tables into place. After breakfast, I muttered. I wondered if Jay and Colin were also coming on the canoe trip. I had forgotten to ask Larry. I headed quickly down the dark hill. The dew had already fallen, and the tall grass was slippery and wet. Halfway down, I could see the dark outline of the forbidden bunk, hunched forward as if preparing to strike. Forcing myself to look away, I jogged the rest of the way to bunk four. To my surprise, I could see through the window that someone was moving around inside. Colin and Jay are back, I thought. Eagerly, I pushed open the door and burst inside. Hey, where have you guys been? I cried. I stopped short and gasped. Two strangers stared back at me. One was sitting on the edge of Colin's top bunk, pulling off his sneakers. The other was leaning over the dresser, pulling a t-shirt from one of the drawers. Hi, you in there. The boy at the dresser stood up straight, his eyes studying me. He had a very short black hair and a gold stud in one ear. Total hunk. I swallowed hard. Am I in the wrong bunk? Is this bunk four? They both stared at me confused. I saw that the other boy, the one in Colin's bunk, also had black hair. But his was long and scraggly and fell over his forehead. Yeah, this is bunk four, he said. We're new, the short-haired boy added. I'm Tommy and he's Chris. We just started today. Hi, I said uncertainly. My name's Billy. My heart was pounding like a tom-tom in my chest. Where's Colin and Jay? Who? Chris asked. They told us this bunk was mostly empty. Well, Colin and Jay, I started. We just arrived. We don't know anyone, Tommy interrupted. He pushed the drawer shut. But that's Jay's drawer, I said, bewildered, pointing. What did you do with Jay's stuff? Tommy gazed back at me in surprise. The drawer was empty, he replied. Almost all the drawers were empty, Chris nodded, tossing his sneakers to the floor. Except for the bottom two drawers. That's my stuff, I said, my head spinning. But Colin and Jay, their stuff was here, I insisted. The whole cabin was empty, Tommy said. Maybe your friends got moved. Maybe, I said weakly. I sat down on the lower bunk beneath my bed. My legs felt shaky. A million thoughts were whirring through my mind, all of them frightening. This is weird, I said aloud. It's not a bad bunk, Chris said, pulling down his blanket and settling in. Kinda cozy. How long you staying at camp? Tommy asked, pulling on an oversized white t-shirt. All summer? No, I exclaimed with a shudder. I'm not staying, I sputtered. I mean, I'm leaving on Visitor's Day next week. Chris flashed Tommy a surprised glance. Huh? When are you leaving? He asked again. On Visitor's Day, I repeated. When my parents come up for Visitor's Day. But didn't you hear Uncle Al's announcement before dinner? Tommy asked, staring hard at me. Visitor's Day has been canceled. Chapter 17. I drifted in and out of a troubled sleep that night. Even with the blanket pulled up to my chin, I felt chilled and afraid. I felt so weird to have two strange guys in the bunk, sleeping where Jay and Colin slept. I was worried about my missing friends. What had happened to them? Why hadn't they come back? As I tossed restlessly in my top bunk, I heard howls off in the distance, animal cries, probably coming from the forbidden bunk. Long, frightening howls carried by the wind into our open bunk window. At one point, I thought I heard kids screaming. I sat up straight, suddenly alert, and listened. Had I dreamed the frightful shrieks? I was so scared and confused, it was impossible to tell what was real and what was a nightmare. Oh, side note, I heard horrible screaming last night at like 4 a.m. It was spooky. All right, barrio life. It took hours to fall back asleep. I woke to a gray, overcast morning, the air heavy and cold. Pulling on swim trunks and a t-shirt, I raced to the lodge to find Larry. I had to find out what had happened to Jay and Colin. I searched everywhere for him without success. Larry wasn't at breakfast. None of the other counselors admitted to knowing anything. Frank, the counselor who had taken my two friends on the hike, was also not there. I finally found Larry at the waterfront, preparing a long metal canoe for our river trip. "Larry, where are they?" I cried out breathlessly. He gazed up at me, holding an armload of canoe paddles. His expression turned to bewilderment. "Huh? Chris and Tommy? They'll be here soon." "No," I cried, grabbing his arm. "Jay and Colin, where are they? What happened to them? Larry, you've got to tell me." I gripped his arm tightly. I was gasping for breath. I could feel the blood pulsing at my temples. "You've got to tell me," I repeated shrilly. He pulled away from me and let the paddles fall beside the canoe. "I don't know anything about them," he replied quickly. "But Larry, really, I don't," he insisted in the same quiet voice. His expression softened. He placed a hand on my trembling shoulder. "Tell you what, Billy," he said, staring hard into my eyes. "I'll ask Uncle Al about it after our trip, okay? I'll find out for you when we get back." I stared back at him, trying to decide if he was being honest. I couldn't tell. His eyes were as calm and cold as marbles. He leaned forward and pushed the canoe into the shallow river. "Here, take one of these life preservers," he said, pointing to a pile of blue rubber vests behind me. "Strap it on, then get in." I did as he instructed. I saw that I had no choice. Chris and Tommy came running up to us a few seconds later. They obediently followed Larry's instructions and strapped on the life preserver vests. A few minutes later, the four of us were seated cross-legged inside the long, slender canoe, drifting slowly away from the shore. The sky was still charcoal gray, the sun hidden behind hovering dark clouds. The canoe bumped over the choppy river waters. The current was stronger than I had realized. We began to pick up speed. The low trees and shrubs along the riverbank slid past rapidly. Larry sat facing us in the front of the canoe. He demonstrated how to paddle as the river carried us away. He watched us carefully, a tight frown on his face, as the three of us struggled to pick up the rhythm he was showing us. Then, when we finally seemed to catch on, Larry grinned and carefully turned around, gripping the sides of the canoe as he shifted his position. "The sun is trying to come out," he said, his voice muffled in the strong breeze over the rippling water. I glanced up. The sky looked darker than before. He stayed with his back to us, facing forward, allowing the three of us to do the paddling. I had never paddled a canoe before. It was harder than I imagined. But as I fell into the rhythm with Tommy and Chris, I began to enjoy it. Dark water smacked against the bow of the canoe, sending up splashes of white froth. The current grew stronger, and we picked up speed. The air was still cold, but the steady work of rowing warmed me. After a while, I realized I was sweating. We rowed past tangles of yellow and gray trunk trees. The river suddenly divided in two, and we shifted our paddles to take the left branch. Larry began paddling again, working to keep us off the tall rocks that jutted between the river branches. The canoe bobbed up and slapped down, booty, rocking everywhere. Cold water poured over the sides. The sky darkened even more. I wondered if it was about to storm. As the river widened, the current grew rapid and strong. I realized we didn't need to paddle. The current was doing most of the work. The river sloped down. Wide swirls of frothing white water made the canoe leap and bounce. "Here come the rapids!" Larry shouted, cupping his hands around his mouth so we could hear him. "Hang on! It gets pretty wild!" I felt a tremor of fear as a wave of icy water splashed over me. The canoe rose up on a shelf of white water, then hit hard as it landed. I could hear Tommy and Chris laughing excitedly behind me. Another icy wave rolled over the canoe, startling me. I cried out and nearly let go of my paddle. Tommy and Chris laughed again. I took a deep breath and held on tightly to the paddle, struggling to keep rhythm. "Hey, look!" Larry cried suddenly. To my astonishment, he climbed to his feet. He leaned forward, pointing into the swirling white water. "Look at those fish!" he shouted. As he leaned down, the canoe was jarring by a powerful rush of current. The canoe spun to the right. I saw the startled look on Larry's face as he lost his balance. His arms shot forward, and he plunged headfirst into the tossing waters. "No!" I screamed. I glanced back at Tommy and Chris, who had stopped paddling and were staring into the swirling dark waters. Their expressions froze in open-mouthed horror. "Larry! Larry!" I was screaming the name over and over without realizing it. The canoe continued to slide rapidly down the churning waters. Larry didn't come up. "Larry!" Behind me, Tommy and Chris also called out his name, their voices shrill and frightened. Where was he? Why didn't he swim to the surface? The canoe was drifting farther and farther downriver. "Larry! We have to stop," I screamed. "We have to slow down." "We can't," Chris shouted back. "We don't know how." Still, no sign of Larry. I realized he must be in trouble. Without thinking, I tossed my paddle into the river, climbed to my feet, and plunged into the dark, swirling waters to save him. Do you notice and recognize Chapter 18s? They're just there in the air. I jumped without thinking and swallowed a mouthful of the brown water as I went down. I heard thudding in my chest as I struggled frantically to the surface, sputtering and choking, gasping in a deep breath. I lowered my head and tried to swim against the current. My sneakers felt as if they weighed 1,000 pounds. I realized I should have pulled them off before I jumped. The water heaved and tossed. I moved my arms in long, desperate strokes, pulling myself toward the spot where Larry had fallen. Glancing back, I saw the canoe. A dark blur growing smaller and smaller. "Wait!" I wanted to shout to Tommy and Chris. "Wait for me to get Larry!" But I knew that they didn't know how to slow the canoe. They were helpless as the current carried them away. Where was Larry? I sucked in another mouthful of air and froze as I felt a sharp cramp in my right leg. The pain shot through my entire right side. I slid under the water and waited for the pain to lessen. The cramp seemed to tighten until I could barely move the leg. Water rushed over me. I struggled to pull myself up to the surface. As I choked in more air, I stroked rapidly and hard, pulling myself up, ignoring the sharp pain in my leg. Hey! What was that object floating just ahead of me? A piece of driftwood being carried by the current? Brown water washed over me, blinding me, tossing me back. Sputtering, I pulled myself back up. Water rolling down my face, I struggled to see. Larry! He came floating right at me. Larry! Larry! I managed to scream, but he didn't answer me. I could see clearly now that he was floating. Face down. The leg cramp miraculously vanished as I reached out with both hands and grabbed Larry's shoulders. I pulled him headfirst from the water, rolled him onto his back, and wrapped my arm around his neck. I was using the life-saving technique my parents had taught me. Turning downriver, I searched for the canoe, but the current had carried it out of sight. I swallowed another mouthful of icy water. Choking, I held on to Larry. I kicked hard. My right leg still felt tight and weak, but at least the pain was gone. Kicking and pulling with my free hand, I dragged Larry toward the shore. To my relief, the current helped. It seemed to pull in the same direction. A few seconds later, I was close enough to the shore to stand, wearily panting like a wild animal. I tottered to my feet and dragged Larry on to the wet mud of the shore. Was he dead? Had he drowned before I reached him like a little bitch? I stretched him out on his back and, still panting loudly, struggled to catch my breath, to stop my entire body from trembling. I leaned over him and his eyes opened. He started to blink at me as if he didn't recognize me. Finally, he whispered my name. "Billy," he choked out. "Are we okay?" Larry and I rested for a bit. Then we walked back to camp, following the river upstream. We were soaked clear through and drenched with mud, but I didn't care. We were alive. We were okay. I had saved Larry's life. We didn't talk much all the way back. It was taking every ounce of strength we had just to walk. I asked Larry if he thought Tommy and Chris would be okay. "Hope so," he muttered, breathing hard. "They'll probably ride to shore and walk back like us." I took this opportunity to ask him about Jay and Colin. I thought maybe Larry would tell me the truth since we were completely alone, and since I just saved his fucking life. But he insisted he didn't know anything about my two bunkmates. As we walked, he raised one hand and swore he didn't know anything at all. So many frightening things have happened, I muttered. He nodded, keeping his eyes straight ahead. It's been strange, he agreed. I waited for him to say more, but he walked on in silence. It took 3 hours to walk back. We hadn't traveled downriver as far as I had thought, but the muddy shore kept twisting and turning, making our journey longer. As the camp came into view, my knees buckled and my legs nearly collapsed under me. Breathing hard, drenched in perspiration, our clothes still damp and covered in mud, we trudged wearily onto the waterfront.
Hey!
A voice called from the swim area. Uncle Al, dressed in baggy green shorts, came hurrying across the dirt to us.
What happened?
He asked. We had an accident, I cried before Larry had a chance to reply. I fell in, Larry admitted, his face reddening beneath the splattered mud. Billy jumped in and saved me. We walked back. But Tommy and Chris couldn't stop the canoe. They drifted away, I cried. We both nearly drowned, Larry told the frowning camp director. But Billy, he saved my life. Can you send someone to find Tommy and Chris? I asked, suddenly starting to shake all over from exhaustion, I guess.
The two boys floated on downriver?
Uncle Al asked, staring hard at the Larry, scratching the back of his fringe of yellow hair. Larry nodded.
We have to find them, I insisted, trembling harder.
Uncle Al continued to glare at Larry.
What about my canoe? He demanded angrily. That's our best canoe. How am I supposed to replace it?
Larry shrugged unhappily.
We'll have to go look for that canoe tomorrow,
Uncle Al snapped. He doesn't care about the two boys, I realized. He doesn't care about them at all.
Go get in dry clothes, Uncle Al instructed Larry and me.
He stormed off towards the lodge, shaking his head. I turned and started toward the cabin, feeling chilled, my entire body still trembling. I could feel a strong wave of anger sweep over me. I had just saved Larry's life, but Uncle Al didn't care about that. And he didn't care about the two campers who were lost on the river. He didn't care about the two campers and the count. He didn't care that two campers. He didn't care that two campers and a counselor never returned from their hike. He didn't care that boys were attacked by creatures. He didn't care that kids disappeared and were never mentioned again. He didn't care about any of us. He only cared about his stupid fucking canoe. My anger quickly turned to fear. Of course, I had no way of knowing that the scariest part of my summer was still to come.
Chap, 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 chap to chapter 19.
I was all alone in the bunk that night. I pulled an extra blanket onto my bed and slid into a tight ball beneath the covers. I wondered if I'd be able to fall asleep, or if my frightened, angry thoughts would keep me tossing and turning for another night. But I was so weary and exhausted, even the eerie, mournful howls from the forbidden bunk couldn't keep me awake. I fell into deep blackness and didn't wake up until I felt someone shaking my shoulders. Startled alert, I sat up straight. Larry, I cried, my voice still clogged with sleep. What's happening? I squinted across the room. Larry's bed was rumpled, the blanket balled at the end. He had obviously come in late at night and slept in the bunk, but Tommy and Chris's beds were still untouched from the day before. Special hike, Larry said, walking over to his bunk. Hurry, get dressed. Huh? I stretched and yawned. Outside the window, it was still gray. The sun hadn't risen. What kind of hike? Uncle Al called a special hike, Larry replied, his back to me. He grabbed the sheet and started to make his bed. With a groan, I lowered myself to the cabin floor. I felt cold beneath my bare feet.
Don't we get to rest? I mean, after what happened yesterday?
I glanced once again at Tommy's and Chris's unused beds. It's not just us, Larry replied, smoothing the sheet. It's the whole camp. Everyone's going. Uncle Al is leading it. I pulled on a pair of jeans, stumbling across the cabin with one leg in. A sudden feeling of dread fell over me. It wasn't scheduled, I said darkly. Where's Uncle Al taking us? Larry didn't reply.
Where?
I repeated shrilly. He pretended he didn't hear me.
Tommy and Chris, they didn't come back, I asked glumly, pulling on my sneakers.
Luckily, I had brought two pairs. My shoes from yesterday sat in the corner, still soaked through and mud-covered. They'll turn up, Larry replied finally, but he didn't sound as if he meant to. I finished getting dressed, then ran up the hill to get breakfast. It was a warm, gray morning. It must have rained during the night. The tall grass glistened wetly, yawning and blinking against the harsh gray light. Campers headed quietly up the hill. I saw that most of them had the same confused expression I had.
Why were we going on this unscheduled hike so early in the morning? How long was it going to be? Where were we going? I hoped that Al or one of the counselors would explain everything to us at breakfast, but none of them appeared in the mess hall. We ate quietly, without the usual joking around. I found myself thinking about the terrifying canoe trip yesterday. I could almost taste the brackish brown water again. I saw Larry floating toward me, face down, floating on the churning water like a clump of seaweed. I pictured myself trying to get to him, struggling to swim, struggling to go against the current, to keep afloat in the swirls of white water. And I saw the blur of the canoe as the strong river current carried it out of sight. Suddenly, Dawn and Dory burst into my thoughts. I wondered if they were okay. I wondered if they were going to try to meet me again by the waterfront. Breakfast was French toast with syrup. It was usually my favorite, but this morning I just poked at it with my fork. "Line up outside," a counselor cried from the doorway. Chairs scraped loudly. We all obediently climbed to our feet and began making our way outside. Where were they taking us? Why doesn't anyone tell us what this is about? The sky had brightened to pink, but the sun still hadn't risen over the horizon. We formed a single file line along the wall of the lodge. I was near the end of the line, toward the bottom of the hill. Some kids were cracking jokes and playfully shoving each other, but most were standing quietly or leaning against the wall, waiting to see what was going to happen. Once the line was formed, one of the counselors walked the length of it, pointing his finger and moving his lips in concentration as he counted us. He counted us twice to make sure he had the right number. Then, Uncle Al appeared at the front of the line. He wore a brown and green camouflage outfit, the kind soldiers wear in movies. He had on very black sunglasses, even though the sun wasn't up yet. Junkie. He didn't say a word. He signaled to Larry and another counselor, who were both carrying very large, heavy-looking brown bags over their shoulders. Then Uncle Al strode quickly down the hill, his eyes hidden behind the dark sunglasses, his features set in a tight frown. He stopped in front of the last camper. "This way," he announced loudly, pointing toward the waterfront. Those were his only words.
"This way."
And we began to follow, walking at a pretty fast clip. Our sneakers slid against the wet grass. A few kids were giggling about something behind me. To my surprise, I realized I was now at the front of the line. I was close enough to call out to Uncle Al, so I did. "Where are we going?" I shouted. He quickened his pace and didn't reply. "Uncle Al, is this going to be a long hike?" I called. He pretended he hadn't heard. I decided to give up. He led us toward the waterfront, then turned right. Thick clumps of trees stood a short way up ahead where the river narrowed. Glancing back to the end of the line, I saw Larry and the other counselors, bags on their shoulders, hurrying to catch up to Al. "What is this about?" I wondered, and as I stared at the clumps of low, tangled trees up ahead, a thought pushed its way in my head. I can escape. The thought was so frightening, but suddenly so real. It took a long time to form. I can escape into the trees. I can run away from Uncle Al and this frightening camp. The idea was so exciting, I nearly stumbled over my own feet. I bumped into the kid ahead of me, a big bruiser of a guy named Tyler, and he turned and glared at me. "Whoa," I told myself, feeling my heart start to pound in my chest. Think about this. Think carefully. I kept my eyes locked on the woods. As we drew closer, I could see the thick trees, so close together that the branches were all intertwined, seeming to stretch on forever. They'd never find me in there, I told myself. It would be really easy to hide in the woods. But then what? I couldn't stay in the woods forever. Then what? Staring at the trees, I forced myself to concentrate, forced myself to think clearly. I could follow the river, yes, stay on the shore, follow the river. It was bound to come to a town eventually. It had to come to a town. I'd walk to the first town, then I'd call my parents. I can do it, I thought. So excited I could barely stay in line. I just have to run, make a dash for it. When no one is looking, into the woods, deep into the woods. We were at the edge of the trees now. The sun had pulled itself up, brightening the rose-colored morning sky. We stood in the shadows of the trees. I can do it, I told myself. I'm a big boy. Soon, my heart thudded loudly, my head sweating even though the air was still cold. Calm down, Billy, I warned myself. Just calm down, baby, don't you talk, because calm down, baby. No Mac Lethal. Wait for your chance. Wait till the time is right, then leave Camp Nightmare behind forever. forever. Standing in the shade, I studied the trees. I spotted a narrow path into the woods, a few yards ahead. I tried to calculate how long it would take me to reach the path. Probably 10 seconds at most, and then, in another 5 seconds, I could be protected in the trees. I can do it, I thought. I could be gone in less than 10 seconds. I took a deep breath. I paced myself. And I also braced myself. I tensed my leg muscles, preparing to run. Then I glanced at the front of the line. To my horror, Uncle Al was standing staring directly at me, and he held a rifle in his hands. Hey, this is obviously going to be the longest episode of Dune Reads Goosebumps as of yet, and obviously the worst quality, aside from the ones read by Sam Skills. Anyway, I do apologize for both those facts, and let's just trudge on. Let's just trudge on and hike like they are, just like Billy, you know? Chapter 20. I cried out when I saw the rifle in his hands. Had he read my thoughts? Did he know I was about to make a run for it? A cold chill slid down my back as I gaped at the rifle. As I raised my eyes to Uncle Al's face, I realized he wasn't looking at me. He had turned his attention to the two counselors. They had lowered the bags to the ground and were bending over them, trying to get them open. Why did we stop? Tyler, the big kid ahead of me, asked. Is the hike over? Another kid joked. A few kids laughed. Guess we can go back now, another kid said. I stood watching in disbelief as Larry and the other counselor began unloading rifles from the two bags. Line up and get one, Uncle Al instructed us, tapping the handle of his own rifle against the ground. One rifle per boy. Come on, hurry. No one moved. I think everyone thought Uncle Al was kidding or something. What's wrong with you boys? I said hurry, he snapped angrily. He grabbed up an armload of rifles and began moving down the line, pushing one in each boy's hands. He pushed a rifle against my chest so hard I staggered back a few steps. I grabbed it by the barrel before it fell to the ground. What's going on here? Tyler asked me. I shrugged, studying the rifle with horror. I'd never held any kind of real gun before. My parents were both opposed to firearms of all kinds. A few minutes later, we're all lined up in the shadow of the trees, each holding a rifle. Uncle Al stood near the middle of the line and motioned us into a tight circle so we could hear him. What's going on? Is this target practice? One boy asked. Larry and the other counselor snickered at that. Uncle Al's features remained hard and serious.
Listen up, he barked. No more jokes. This is serious business, like the internet.
The circle of campers tightened around him. We grew silent. A bird squawked noisily in a nearby tree. Somehow, it reminded me of my plan to escape. Was I about to be really sorry I hadn't made a run for it?
Two girls escaped from the girls' camp last night, Uncle Al announced in a flat, businesslike tone. A blonde and a redhead.
Dawn and Dory, I exclaimed to myself. I'll bet it was them.
I believe, Uncle Al continued, that these are the same two girls who sneaked over to the boys' camp and hid near the waterfront a few days ago.
Yes, I thought happily it was Dawn and Dory. They escaped. I suddenly realized a broad smile had broken out of my face. I quickly forced it away before Uncle Al could see my happy reaction to the news.
The two girls are in these woods, boys. They're nearby, Uncle Al continued. He raised his rifle. Your guns are loaded. Aim carefully when you see them. They won't get away from us.
This just got super cool. I feel like since 2 days ago is the 4th of July, it's very American.
Get her done,
like that American comedian, because that's, oh god, I hate America. No, I'm kidding. Not 9/11 and doing stuff.
Chapter 21. Huh? I gasped in disbelief. You mean we're supposed to shoot them? I glanced around the circle of campers. They all looked as dazed and confused as I did.
Yeah, we're supposed to shoot them, Uncle Al replied coldly. I told you, they're trying to escape.
But we can't, I cried.
It's easy, Uncle Al said.
He raised his rifle to his shoulder and pretended to fire.
See? Nothing to it. It's a point-and-click interface. Plug and play, kids. Plug and play.
But we can't kill people, I insisted.
Kill?
His expression changed beyond the dark glasses. I didn't say anything about killing, did I? These guns are loaded with tranquilizer darts.
We just want to stop these girls, not hurt them.
Uncle Al took two steps toward me, the rifle still in his hands. He stood over me menacingly, lowering his face close to mine. You got a problem with that, Billy? He demanded. He was challenging me. I saw the other boys back away. The woods grew silent. Even the birds stopped squawking. You got a problem with that? Uncle Al repeated, his face so close to mine, I could smell his sour breath and bourbon. Terrified, I took a step back, then another. Why was he doing this to me? Why was he challenging me like this? I took a deep breath and held it in. Then I screamed as loudly as I could. I won't do it! Without completely realizing what I was doing, I raised my rifle to my shoulder and aimed the barrel at Uncle Al's chest. You're gonna be sorry, Uncle Al growled in a low voice. He tore off his sunglasses and heaved them into the woods. Then he narrowed his eyes at me furiously. Drop that rifle, Billy. I'm gonna make you sorry. No, I told him, standing my ground. You're not. Camp is over. You're not gonna do anything. My legs were trembling so hard I could barely stand, but I wasn't going to... But I wasn't going to go hunting Dawn and Dory. Now it says Dawn and Dawn for like the last four times, which is even more confusing. It says D-A-W-N and D-O-N. I wasn't going to do anything else, Uncle Al said, ever. Give me the rifle, Billy, he said in a low, menacing voice. He reached a hand toward my gun. Hand it over, boy. No, I cried. Hand it over now, he ordered, his eyes narrowed, burning into me. Now. No, I cried. He blinked once, twice. Then he leapt at me. I took a step back with the rifle aimed at Uncle Al and pulled the trigger. Chapter 22. The final chapter. The rifle emitted a soft pop. Uncle Al tossed his head back and laughed. He let the rifle drop to the ground at his feet. Hey, I cried out confused. I kept the rifle aimed at his chest. Congratulations, Billy. Uncle Al said, grinning warmly at me. You passed. He stepped forward and reached out his hand to shake mine. The other campers dropped their rifles. Glancing at them, I saw that they were all grinning too. Larry, also grinning, flashed me a thumbs up sign. What is going on? I demanded suspiciously. I slowly lowered the rifle. Uncle Al grabbed my hand and squeezed it. Congratulations, Billy. I knew you'd pass. I don't understand. I screamed, totally frustrated, but instead of explaining anything to me, Uncle Al turned to the trees and shouted, Okay, everyone, it's over. He passed. Come out and congratulate him. As I stared in disbelief, my wide-open mouth hanging down around my knees, people began stepping out from behind the trees. First came Dawn and Dory. You were hiding in the woods, I cried. They laughed in response. Congratulations! Dawn cried, and then others came out, grinning and congratulating me. I screamed when I recognized Mike. He was okay. Beside him were Jay and Roger. Colin stepped out of the woods, followed by Tommy and Chris, all smiling and happy, and okay. Wait, what is going on here? I stammered. I was totally stunned. I felt dizzy. I didn't get it. I really didn't get it. And then... my mom and dad stepped out from the trees. Mom rushed up and gave me a hug. Dad patted the top of my head. I knew you'd pass, Billy, he said. I could see happy tears in his eyes. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I pushed Mom gently away. Passed what? I demanded. What is this? What's going on? Uncle Al put his arm around my shoulders and guided me away from the group of campers. Mom and Dad followed close behind.
This isn't really summer camp,
Uncle Al explained, still grinning at me, his face bright pink.
It's a government testing lab.
Huh? I swallowed hard.
You know your parents are scientists, Billy, Uncle Al continued. Well, they're about to leave on a very important expedition, and this time they wanted to take you along with them.
How come you didn't tell me? I asked my parents. We couldn't, Mom exclaimed.
According to the government rules, Billy, Uncle Al continued, children aren't allowed to go on official government expeditions unless they pass certain tests. This is what you've been doing here. You've been taking tests.
Tests to see what? I demanded, still dazed.
Well, we wanted to see if you could obey orders, Uncle Al explained. You pass when you refuse to go to the forbidden bog.
He held up two fingers.
Second, we had to test your bravery. You demonstrated that by rescuing Larry.
He held up a third finger.
Third, we had to see if you knew when not to follow orders. You passed that test by refusing to hunt for Dawn and Dory.
And everyone was in on it? "What the fuck?" I asked. "All the campers, the counselors, everyone, they were all actors?" Uncle Al nodded. "They all work here in the testing lab." His expression turned serious. "You see, Billy, your parents want to take you to a very dangerous place. Perhaps the most dangerous place in the known universe. So we had to make sure you could handle it." "The most dangerous place in the universe? Where?" I asked my parents. "Where are you taking me?" "It's a very strange planet called Earth," Dad replied, glancing at Mom. "It's very far away from here, but it could be exciting. The inhabitants there are weird and unpredictable. No one has ever studied them." Laughing, I stepped between my mom and dad and put my arms around them. "Earth? It sounds pretty weird, but it can never be as dangerous or as exciting as Camp Nightmoon," I exclaimed. "We'll see," Mom replied quietly. "We'll see." The end.
Okay, so all along they were aliens, because the first twist was absolutely terrible, but then you get that last twist on the last paragraph and you're like, alright, this wasn't worth all the effort, you know, not nearly worth all the effort, but okay, I can get that. That's fine. That's, I guess, the whole story. I guess, what do you expect from Goosebumps? Anyway, this has been Dune Reads Goosebumps. I need to either keep these up more or start putting out other audiobooks more, or record some music or do something, but yeah, I'll keep updating stuff. Anyway, you can reach me via Twitter at Dune, or at Dune. You can email me at DuneReadsGoosebumps@gmail.com. You can join the Facebook group of Dune Reads Goosebumps. There's tons of ways to reach me. I'm very accessible here, people. Anyway, I don't know what the next book is. I don't care. This is the longest one ever. You know. Stay spooky, bitches!